In the city of Indianapolis, there is a church of cannabis. California, you may already know that that state has a number of cannabis churches. But we also are located not far from a church of cannabis. Now, these cannabis churches, if you read about them, if you study about them, you may find that they are not officially connected. But I do think that you would find that there would be some similarities, some strong similarities. If you were to speak with someone who is a member of a quote-unquote cannabis church, they might tell you that they have a sacred flower. They might also tell you that to become a member of that church, you have some money that you have to pay. And once you have paid membership to the cannabis congregation, you will receive marijuana as well as some other items. As I did some looking into cannabis churches this past week, I found that at least one has a gift shop. One so-called pastor, as he was presenting his information, said, "Breathe deep and blow harder." In one assembly, a man prayed, "Thank you, God, for weed." A woman called out, "I'm thankful for the spirit of cannabis." About 2,000 years ago, there was a preacher, a gospel preacher by the name of Paul. In 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 1, this preacher said a time would come when men would give heed to seducing spirits. This same verse, if you were to read it, or maybe you can quote it, this same verse talks about accepting the doctrines of demons. In the next book, related to Timothy, 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 3 and 4, preacher Paul gave a little more information. Paul said that there would be some people who would have itching ears. And he said because of these itching ears, they would bring in a lot of teachers who would agree or support their lusts. Paul said that a time would come when men would turn away their ears from the truth. At least some, from what I can tell, who have become involved with these so-called cannabis churches have some knowledge about God. They have some knowledge about the Bible. In fact, as you begin to look at what is taking place in some of these cannabis congregations, you find that some of the practices have been drawn from Christianity, from the Bible. They've been borrowing some things. One man who came to one of these assemblies had on a Jesus Loves You hat. Now, I would presume that from that hat, he has at least a little knowledge of Jesus, the church, and the Bible. There is a lot of religious ignorance in the world, and there is no doubt about that. We've talked about that. We've said it about that, and there are several examples of that. But along with that religious ignorance, we also find the desire for something else. Men have looked at God. They have looked at his word. They've looked at the church, and they have said, "We want something else." If you read some of the stuff that's being written now, that's being said by the people involved with the cannabis churches, that's one of the things that they say. "We've tried that so-called Christian faith, and we want something else. We want something different. We want to switch things up a little bit." Isn't that what Paul said? Men will turn away their ears from the truth. Tonight, I want to briefly look at some of the ways, some of the methods that people have used to turn away from God, his word, and the church. Now, you've probably heard over the years some of these words that I'm going to use, used by someone. But maybe you've heard the word used and you have forgotten, or maybe you never knew what it meant. But tonight we're going to look at some words that are tossed around oftentimes, but are not necessarily defined. One of the words that we sometimes hear is the word theist. Another word that is related to theist, of course, would be theism. Someone says, "I'm a theist," or someone says, "I'm associated with theism." If a person says that he or she is a theist, or they believe in theism, what they are saying is that I believe in at least one God. Now, maybe they only believe in one God, or maybe they believe in 100 different gods, but a theist is someone who believes in at least one God. If you would look at the people who are here tonight, we are a theist, but that's not all that we are. We are monotheists. That word, of course, when you look at mono, that is a way of describing one. And that word theist, that is that word that describes a belief in a god or gods. But when you put mono on there, monotheist or monotheism. A monotheist is someone who believes in one god. Monotheism is that support system, that belief system where someone says, "I believe in only one god." Now, if we had a Jewish neighbor, and we were discussing with that Jewish neighbor some things about God, we would be able to say to that Jewish neighbor, "You are a monotheist." And if he were familiar with monotheism, he would say, "Yes, I am a monotheist. I believe in monotheism. There is, according to my faith, only one God." And we would say to him, "We agree with you on that basic point." If we were dealing with a Muslim, believe it or not, a Muslim would be a monotheist. Now, when we talk about a Muslim, Their one God is Allah. Now, some say that Allah is the same God as Jehovah, the God of the Bible. That is not true. If you speak with someone about the Muslim faith and you say, does Allah have a son? They will say no. The Quran is almost over emphatic about denying that Allah has a son. Well, that's a problem for us, because was it not the son who came to the earth, died for sins, was raised, and he is the one who intercedes for us? Yes. So when we think about the Islamic faith, we agree that there is only one God. Monotheism is right. We're theists. Subcategory, we are a monotheist just like you are. But we do not believe in the same God that you do. All right, if you have theism, and that word describes a belief in at least one God, maybe multiple gods, and you have this related word monotheism, one God, and you flip that around a little bit, you find that there is a related word, and that related word is the word atheism. Now think about atheism in terms of theism. Theism is that belief, T-H-E-I-S-M, or theist. Those words describe someone who believes in a deity. But if you take that small letter A, and you put that A at the prefix at the beginning of theist, that theist becomes atheist. Theism now becomes atheism just by adding the small letter A. Well, most, I think, are well aware of what an atheist is or what atheism is. Just by adding that A, we're taking someone who is a believer in some type of deity, and the person now says, I'm an atheist, or I believe in atheism. The person, of course, does not believe that there is any kind of God. Over the years, and maybe you've had the same experience, I've run into some people who say, I'm an atheist. Atheism is my faith. I've not perhaps dealt with as many atheists as others have. But you know, I find it interesting that when something like a missile strike announcement is made, all of a sudden the atheists seem to find religion. And that's not the only time that atheists somehow seem to lose their lack of belief in God. It struck me as odd over the years that, sir, there's some people who would either say, I don't believe in God, or I'm not sure if there's a God, but would you pray for me? I'm having surgery. My mom is having surgery. We're going to go on a dangerous trip overseas. We're concerned about our safety, and I would like you to pray for me. Then there is, of course, that old saying that there are no atheists in foxholes. Now, I've not been in combat. I've not had that particular experience, but I do suspect that there is some truth in that statement. If and when old age comes, you may find the person who professed atheism in the earlier years of life, all of a sudden now they're beginning to think about God. I'm going to die. And will I face some kind of God? So when we look at atheism, and we look at theism, and when we look at monotheism, those three words all happen to end in the same way. And that is ISM. Ism for atheism, ism for theism, ism for atheism, theism, and monotheism. Another ism is Gnosticism. Now, Gnosticism was a problem in the first century and even before, and you still find it in some form. It's typically not referred to as Gnosticism now, but we still have the same basic problem. Gnosticism, at least the main tenet of it, would be higher knowledge. There were some people way back when, about 2,000 years ago, and even going back a little further, who said we have special knowledge. We have unique insights. And if you want these special insights, if you want these unique facts, you have to become part of our little special group. This is not information that just anybody can get. You have to become part of our society. And there were, of course, different rituals, different rites for that. And once you come into our secret organization, we're going to give you access to this secret information. Well, we have something similar today when you look at the Masonic Lodge. They would, of course, take that organization and make a similar point about it. We have, if we allow you into the organization, if you're part of the group, then you go through the various rituals, and we will also give you some secret information as you progress up the so-called ladder. Well, cannabis churches, they do not seem to stress much knowledge, but they do stress experience, what they offer. And as we begin to look at men and how they think about God and spiritual things, how they think about the church, it's almost, as far as what I can tell, men think that they can somehow one-up God. They say, we're going to offer some different knowledge. We're going to offer you some special knowledge if you come our way. Others would say, we're going to offer you some special, some different, some unique experiences that you can't get anywhere else unless you join our group. And then there would be some people who would say, we have some different ideas. And if you will come and join with us, we will let you share in these different ideas. The sentiment seems to be that different is better. And that's a big sales pitch. About 2,000 years ago, Paul dealt with this very thing. He said there are going to be some people who have itching ears. They're going to be looking for something different. They're going to be looking for something else. And yet Paul says those itching ears, they're going to be led to seducing spirits. They're going to end up with demonic doctrines. They're going to have lust in the heart, not a sexual lust, but a lust that is a desire. There is that lust. There is that burning passion for something else. We've heard about the God of heaven and earth, and we've heard about the Bible, and we've heard about the Christian faith and so forth. We want something else. Give us something different. When we begin to look at the isms that are in our world, we find that the devil has been very, very busy. I'm not sure I have it. I checked the office tonight before coming in here, and it's not there. I think I have it at the house. But there was a book published as a lectureship book a few years back on isms. Nothing but isms. And if memory serves me correctly, the book is about 2 inches thick. Each lecture is probably about 15 pages, so you can do the math. But they went through and didn't deal with every ism. But they went through and showed just how many different isms there are in the world, and many of those isms are religious. Hinduism, Buddhism, you can just start going down the list. One of the isms in this book, and one of the isms that is practiced by a lot of people in the world, is pantheism. Now, out of all the isms that I can try to wrap my head around, this is the most difficult one for me. Maybe that's because, as far as my thinking, and I believe a lot of the thinking in the Western world, pantheism just seems so foreign. It just seems like such a distinct concept. But pantheism is the idea that all is God. All is God. God is everything, and everything is God. Now, if that sounds to you like a lot of gobbledygook and nonsense, well, good for you. I think you're headed in the right direction with that kind of thinking. But this ism would say that God's a tree. This ism would say that God is a rock. When you look at the sun, that's God. When you look at the moon, that's God. When you look at the stars, that's God. Not made by God, but that's God. And this system of belief, pantheism, would say that when a person dies, that individual is somehow blended back to God, because all is God, and God is everything. Well, if this belief is true, then it seems to me that one would need to worship everything if everything is God. That, to me, would be a very logical consequence. It's not sinful to be concerned about nature. But when we think about this belief, that is pantheism, it goes far beyond just respecting nature. God is not our planet. God is not anything on our planet. In fact, the Bible affirms the very first verse in the Bible, Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1, in the beginning was God, and God created the heavens and the earth. He is distinct. He was before the creation. Pantheism, if we have a biblical view of things, cannot be right. Pantheism puts God in the wrong place. It does not recognize his distinctiveness. It would be confusing, I think, for anybody, unless you're maybe a scholar that specializes in isms. But it would get confusing to try to go through all the different isms and try to explain each one and keep them all straight in the head. In fact, when I deal with isms, I've got to go back sometimes and look at some of the definitions. But there are some basic isms that we can be familiar with, and I think that's helpful for a lot of reasons. One of which, if we talk to someone and they say, well, I believe this or that, we think, boy, that's strange, but maybe the sermon will jog some recollections at some future point that'll be helpful. Another ism that's fairly popular is polytheism. Now, let's think through what we've learned thus far. Theism, what's that? Theism says, I believe that there's a deity. Maybe one God, maybe 100, but theism says, I believe that there's at least one God. Atheism says, I believe that there are no gods. Monotheism says there's only one God. Well, we've pretty much then excluded the category of zero, one, and now we start dealing with many gods, and that's polytheism. I have a hard time understanding pantheism. God is everything, and everything is God. But I can have at least some understanding of polytheism. I can comprehend why some people might come along and say, there are many gods. If men reject the one true God, there is within the heart of man a desire to worship. There is within the heart of man, and Solomon dealt with this in the book of Ecclesiastes, God has placed the spirit of eternity in man. Somehow when God wired us, he put in a spiritual desire that causes the majority of people to seek out something spiritual. If, therefore, men reject the idea that there is one true God, that spirit is going to drive them in some other directions. And when men begin to be driven in other directions, this one is probably going to accept this as his God, and this one's going to accept this as his God, and this guy's going to pick out something else, and it just gets bigger and bigger, it grows and grows, and the end result is polytheism. This belief that there are many gods. Polytheism comes about because people will not accept the fact that there is only one true God. When you start going back, and you can find this in the Bible as well, but when you start going back and you look at some ancient battles, I think maybe the idea is sometimes that people think, well, this guy wanted the land over there, and there probably was some of that. But a lot of the ancient warfare was not necessarily based on greed. It wasn't based on the fact that Group A hated Group B. But a lot of ancient warfare was based on the fact that Group A had this as their God. And Group B said, well, this is our God. And Group A said, our God is powerful. Group B said, our God is more powerful. Well, what happens? There's going to be a contest. And which God, A or B, is going to win? And that was the basis for a lot of the hostilities that we read about in and out of the Bible. As I said, when we start to investigate and list the various isms, it can get, before too long, a bit confusing. And I would propose that as we think about some of the isms and why it's so confusing, that there's a really good reason for that. And that reason goes back to the devil. The devil wants to mess things up as well as he can when it comes to understanding who or what God is, how many gods there are, what God wants with respect to worship, and the truth. The devil is in that business. I only want to read two verses tonight. One is going to be read in just a minute. It's from the book of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 32 and verse 17. It's a very fascinating verse. And then a little later, we're going to pull from Exodus chapter 23. Exodus chapter 23 and verse 13. But in Deuteronomy 32 and verse 17, we find a verse which, in many respects, even though there's not a lot of information there, it helps explain in some detail all this stuff about false gods. And here's what God had to say. Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 17. He says, they sacrificed unto demons, which were no god, to gods that they knew not, to new gods that came up of late. God, as he talks about these false gods, as he talks about these false ways of religion, he says, look, let me tell you what it's associated with. He said demons, the devil. That's where God said this stuff is coming from. Well, in the New Testament, we find some similar statements. John, in 1 John, he writes five chapters. And do you know how that book ends? 1 John, John was someone who dealt with that false ism, Gnosticism. Paul also dealt with it. But as John ends up with 1 John chapter 5 and verse 21, he says, keep yourselves from idols. John was aware of how the devil has used religion to confuse people, lead people astray. And John said, you watch out. You be careful, because this is an ism, idolatry, and the related things in the world, and you need to be careful about that. When John wrote the final book, or at least the final book that we consider to be the end of the New Testament, Revelation chapter 9, verses 20 and 21, John also spoke about those who worship demons and made a reference to idols. The devil has been instrumental in creating a large number of ideas about God, almost all of which are false, and led a number of people astray. And the list of isms, as you start going through it, it's almost overwhelming. Another ism that maybe you've heard or maybe you've read is deism, D-E-I-S-M. Deism is an interesting belief because it says that there is this all-powerful God. And in some respects, I think deism would line up fairly well with the God of the Bible as far as the power and what he was able to do. But deism is distinct, in that a deist would say that, yes, God had the power to create, and God did create. But even though God had the power to create and he used that power, God is not interested in creation. If a deist were preaching that night, he would say, God has no interest in you. No interest whatsoever. He made you. And God is kind of like the watchmaker. He wound everything up. He got everything started. And then God just walked away, said, I don't care about you. God's uninvolved with creation. Well, I don't know about you, but that would be a pretty depressing message if it were true. It's sometimes been claimed, I don't know if this is accurate or not, the evidence is probably more for it rather than against it, but Thomas Jefferson is supposedly, or was supposedly, a believer in deism. When it comes to God and false religion, we can find almost any belief that a person wants to accept. And if a person doesn't find a belief that he or she wants, they can make one. And perhaps not only make one, but likely get government approval. Because of the problems with gods, because of the problems with false religion, when you start looking through the Bible, you not only have references like the end of 1 John chapter 5, 1 John 5:21, Revelation chapter 9, verse 20. You have some other passages. And again, I said I'm going to read Exodus 23, but before I get there and read that passage, I want to give you some other verses which kind of highlight what God has to say about false religion. In Exodus chapter 23 and verse 33, God says to his people, if you become with some, you become involved with some kind of false god, God said that's going to be a snare to you. You think about snaring an animal, grabbing it by its foot, somehow creating a situation where it's immobile. God says this is going to mess you up if you become involved with false religion. Isaiah, different writer, 42 and verse 17, he said, if you become involved with false gods, false religion, he said, you know in advance that this is going to result in your shame and in your ruin. The Ten Commandments, which we're headed to at some point in our Sunday evening studies. Exodus chapter 20, God said in Exodus chapter 20, verse 3, you shall have no other God before me. You see, he knew that people would have itching ears even before the New Testament era came into being. In Exodus chapter 20 and verse 4, God said, I permit no graven image. Don't even think about it. It's illegal. It's unauthorized. In Exodus chapter 20 and verse 5, you may remember there that God said, I am a jealous God. I'm not going to permit that stuff. I know how men think. I know how men may want to go off the reservation spiritually. And God said divinity, that status, that claim, that belongs exclusively to me. And I'm not willing to share that status with anybody else. And then, did you know? That same chapter, Exodus 20 and verse 23, God said even the manufacturing of false gods is permitted. Imagine you have somebody who was a craftsman, maybe they dealt well with silver and some other metals, and they said, we don't believe in false gods, but we're going to hammer out these things so we can sell them to the pagan neighbors. This is how we're going to make our living. God said, I don't even permit that. You can't manufacture false gods. And then God went even further. God said his prohibitions against false religions, false gods, that they were so prohibitive, he said, I don't allow you to even mention their names. Did you know that? God said, don't even mention the name of a false god. Pick this up from Exodus chapter 23, and let's take a look at verse 13. That's going to say exactly what I said, but still I think for this one I would like to read it. And in all things that I have said unto you, take heed. And here it is. God said, make no mention of the name of other gods, neither let it be heard out of thy mouth. Sometimes we tell kids, you don't say that word. That's a bad word. We don't want to hear that word ever come out of your mouth. And that's what God told the Hebrew people. You don't even mention the names of false gods. Another passage, Deuteronomy chapter 7, 25 and 26, God said, you don't bring these false gods, the false religion, into your homes. In spite of all that, and God's people did right at times, but there certainly were a number of periods in Hebrew history where they didn't do right. They did not follow the instructions that we've looked at tonight. And Satan over the years, perhaps he's come to understand that he needs to do some repackaging. A lot of that idolatry that we read about in the Bible that ensnared the people of Israel, that's gone. Maybe it'll be forever gone. But Satan has redone some things now, so people have now come to the point where they will either say there is no God, or we will have a church of cannabis. We have moved on to some new things. No matter what men say, no matter what we read, no matter what people claim, there is only one God. Just as being a theist separates us literally from millions of other people in the world, being a monotheist, that is a believer in one God, who is not a Jew and who is not a Muslim, makes us even more distinct. Being a theist, who is a monotheist, who is not a Jew, who is not a Muslim, who is a Christian who believes in worshiping God in spirit and truth, John 4:24, that makes us a very, very tiny part of the world's population. One might think, well, being such a small part, the devil would not be interested in us. But that's not true. He's as interested in us, even more interested than the other folks. A few days ago, I had someone that I've never met. He saw some of my information online and decided that he was going to shoot me a link to a YouTube video. Tell me about his ministry. Well, I have to admit that my curiosity was perked, so it was about a 2 or 3 minute video. I watched it. Never seen anything like it before. It almost resembled what you would think of as far as a modern children's cartoon. But it had a religious bent to it. Not just a religious bent. It was a religious bent which talked about salvation. It was the sinner's prayer for children. in cartoon form. Oh, they did it up well. I was surprised. I mean, this guy has it down as far as how to create something that is going to be attractive to kids. But pray and be saved. Worldwide. And in the youngest of minds, the devil is working hard to destroy the truth about God, his church, and what's right. And now, right now, he's got some people smoking their way into eternal torment. If there's ever been a time when it was right to buy the truth and sell it not, and that's what we read about in the book of Proverbs, it's now. It's now. We need to hold to the truth that Christ has come, that there is only one God, that the Christian faith is the only way, that the way is narrow, that Christ established his church, that we need to be members of that spiritual body. And the way that we access Christ and we're added to that church, faith, repentance, confession, baptism, faithful Christian living, and we believe that few are going to be saved. That's a message that upsets some people. It's a truth that some people don't want to hear. And it's a truth that offends some people. But it is the truth. Tonight, do you believe that? Do you believe that there are still all those false ways, and yet God says, there's my way. It still exists. You can be part of it. I welcome you to be part of it. And we're part of that. And we want to stay part of that for every day of our life. We hope that's why you're here. If you were part of that way in the past, and you've lost your way spiritually, tonight, God still offers a way back. And we'd like to encourage you that to do that. If you're someone who's on the right path, stay to that path, stick to that path, teach that path to as many others as you can. Otherwise, they also will be lost. Can we help you become a child of God? Can we help you return to the right path? Those are the questions we're asking and hoping that you'll answer in the right way as we stand and sing this last good song.